Another Visiting Poet Series weekend is over at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. And the third annual Allen Ginsberg Memorial Open Mic Poetry Marathon ended earlier this morning at 4:30 a.m. The most touching tribute I can ever conceive being paid to that great American bard was delivered by another great American bard, Ed Sanders. Lead singer for the seminal 60s rock group The Fugs, Ed is rightfully associated with the Beat School of American poetry. Winner of many grants and awards, author of many books of poetry, including Poem from Jail, 1963, 2000 A.D., 1976, Hymn to the Rebel Cafe, 1993, 1968, A History in Verse, 1997, and The Ambitious America, A History in Verse, Volumes 1 and 2, number 2 just about to be released, as is The Poetry and Life of Allen Ginsberg. He's written novels, including The Family, the story of the Charles Manson Group, and is a journalist with publication in The New York Times, The Village Voice, and his own paper, The Woodstock Journal. There is so much we've left out, but still we are pleased to welcome Ed Sanders to the program. Ed, thanks for the great weekend.
Well, yeah, it was a good time. Thank you.
Well, it's been my pleasure, absolutely. You know, let's get into the relationship with Allen and his influence on you. One of your heroes, and you actually left Missouri, where you grew up in the late 50s, after reading Howl. That was a real big influence on you.
Yeah, my generation was very, very strongly influenced by reading Howl, which had been published in 1957. There was a huge Howl had been published in 1956, and there was a big court case for Howl in 1957, and that's when I became aware of it. After Allen won his court case in federal court in San Francisco, and I picked up Howl at the University of Missouri bookstore in Columbia, Missouri, on one of those fraternity weekends where high school kids go there and get partied by fraternities who might ask one to join. And so it was that weekend that I bought Howl and changed my life. Made it much more interesting, I think, that one wonderful American poem celebrating personal freedom and the eeriness of the 50s.
That 50s mentality for all intents and purposes still exists today. I mean, we have problems with language guidelines, the mayor of Auburn trying to control the language that happens at the teen poetry slam. So I can just imagine what kind of effect it had in 1956-57.
Allen's single poem crossed America like a blast of freedom. It pointed out areas of the Bill of Rights that we were not exercising. There's a lot of freedom guaranteed by the Constitution that for whatever reason and for a multiplicity of reasons, citizens did not use. Now they use it much more. I mean, there are things, of course, that between 7 and 9 on television that would have caused Lenny Bruce to get arrested in the 60s. So it's come a little bit of a ways.
Yeah, it's amazing.
But the airwaves are still quite censored. Allen fought his whole life against the Midnight Doctrine on four-letter words because his great poem, Howl, I mean, could not really be performed on radio except, I think, Midnight to 6 or something like that.
The Safe Harbor.
Yeah, so it's only when it's the insomniac hours. So if you're an insomniac, you have a lot more freedom of the airwaves than if you're a regular American and go to bed at 11.
We talked at great length about that, Allen and I, when he was on the show in June of 1994. How do you think Allen ultimately will be remembered?
Well, I think he will be remembered as a great writer of rhymed verse, as well as a great writer of poems in the open field and with long-breathed lines, Howl, Kaddish, great American poems. The early 1954 poem, The Weight of the World is Love, will stand as a great love lyric. His 1983 poem, A White Shroud, about a dream he had of his mother, is a great poem. So he wrote some great poems. And as such, they will join Robert Frost and Carl Sandburg and Edna St. Vincent Millay, an underestimated poet, in my opinion, Emily Dickinson and Marge Piercy and Sharon Olds, other wonderful American poets in the bardic tradition, you know, poets who take public stances. Not all poets are bards. Some decide not to take that public participation that Allenon took. So he's a great American bard. I think he'll be remembered for by the, quote, masses, unquote, for a few poems, and by scholars and by lovers of literature as having impacted his generations. He lived through about three generations in an active literary mode, and he'll be known for the incredible impact he had on American literature, much greater an impact than, say, Ezra Pound or even Robert Frost, in his ability to help others get their books published, and the thousands of benefits and causes that he did, that he rallied behind, in his investigation of government excesses, in his pacifism and his confrontation of the military-industrial surrealist complex. He was a great public bard and will be remembered by cultural historians, too, for his role in helping shape the 20th century.
We're talking with great American bard Ed Sanders. He was the visiting poet at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in spring of 2000. I'm Paul Nelson. We had an E-Poets video poetry exchange with Chicago last night. That was part of the marathon. And it was a very interesting thing to note because you began it with some of Allen's more tender and idealistic thoughts and poems and reflecting on that. And yet, you know, when you hear young people getting into Allen, it's Howl, it's the more angst-oriented stuff that resonates with them on an early level. And some people never get out of that phase. We had 50-year-old, 60-year-old folks, I think from Chicago, reading, you know, more of the angst-oriented stuff. Very interesting dynamic to see that. You were able to reflect on the more hopeful, idealistic, positive side, and yet that's not what people what generally resonates with people.
Well, he was a very erotic in some of his poetry, not all of his poetry, but he was probably the most... You have to go back to an ancient Roman poet to find someone who wrote as frank and brutal on open erotic poetry, and that's the Roman poet Catullus, some of whose poems are never translated because they're more erotic than Allen Ginsberg's were. So Allen was instrumental in helping gays in America come forward. I think without Allen Ginsberg, personal freedom for gays would not be in as advanced state as it is. It would be a few years behind. I think it was inevitable that the gays would be allowed to come out in public, but I think Allen Ginsberg helped speed it up a little bit. So he was a gay hero, but he also, as I pointed out, was a man of intense family values. No poet ever cultivated his personal family and his cousins, his nieces and nephews, and his brother and his father and his stepmother so closely as did Allen Ginsberg during his life. So he was the ultimate family values poet, but also a great gay liberator and a great teacher.
There are a lot of people who consider Allen to be a bodhisattva, and yet his sexual exploits are also legendary. How do you reconcile these seemingly disparate aspects of Allen?
He was a very complicated person. Great writers tend to be a bunch of great writers. I mean, there's two or three people in there jostling for to write poetry. I think... It's a long story, Allen's life, but he comes from a Jewish background. Both sides of his family came over after the anti-Semitic pogroms of the late 19th and early 20th century from the Jewish Pale, which was the part of Russia where the Jews were forced to reside by the Tsarist infrastructure. And so he came from a turbulent background right up front. You know, pogroms, wars, the attacks on the Jews in Russia, forcing these people to flee. So he grew up in a turbulent era through the 30s. He was a young man during the horrible depression. He saw the rise of Hitler and Mussolini and the fall of the Spanish Republic, which impacted him greatly. His parents were on the left, but his mother was a communist, his father was a social democrat. So there was great pressure. People who know about the intense struggle between the socialists and the democratic socialists on one hand and the communists on the other know how torn Allen Ginsberg's early life must have been. So and then he had to be a closet gay all through high school. So he was torn, and many people. I don't know how he got past his background and became such an apostle of freedom. He just decided that he was going to be like a religious poet monk and with a lot of energy. He had a very high metabolism. I haven't seen such a metabolism since, like Teddy Roosevelt or somebody. I mean, he had tremendous energy. He never slept. So I don't know. There are four or five Allen Ginsbergs, and all of them sort of join hands at the end in a complicated bundle. I mean, he was not perfect, but he gave more to others than any other poet ever.
Well, it's very well stated in your poem and tribute to Allen, which you did Friday night during the reading and last night during your short reading as part of the ePoets video link. Would you be able to do that today for us? I'd love that.
I don't have the text here. I don't have it memorized, I don't think. I mean, I could do part of it.
That'd be great. We're talking with Ed Sanders, the visiting poet at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab for Spring 2000.
He was one of my heroes. Where the river of freedom flows, and the blossom of peace grows. Allen has fallen. What a huge and towering genius. Ranking up there with Yeats and Sappho. And he had a tremendous memory. He knew Milton's Lycidas by heart. What professor in America knows Lycidas? He knew 50 pages of Whitman by heart. He knew all the Crazy Jane poems of William Butler Yeats by heart. He knew Catullus poems by heart and knew how to write in sapphic stanzas. Allen. And he had infinitudinibytes of data about his family and the fragments of the 20th century, which he wove into his beautiful and sometimes threnodic chants to the country he loved, because he was a great American. He was one of my heroes, where the river of freedom flows, and the blossom of peace grows. Allen has fallen. Well, while I'm here, I'll do the work. And what's the work? To ease the pain of living everything else. Drunken, dumb show, drunken, dumb show, he was one of my heroes, where the blossom of peace grows, and the river of freedom flows. Ellen, Ellen is falling. No time to sort the mail. No time to organize for freedom. No time to listen to Berg. No time to go to the rock shop. No time to think. No time, no time, no time, no time left. No time, no time, no time, no time left. He was one of my heroes. Where the river of freedom flows, and the blossom of peace grows. Oh, Ellen. Oh, Ellen. Ellen is falling. Allen Ginsberg, 1926-1997.
You know, that's three or four times I've heard that now, and it has this amazing way of just blowing me away. just amazing. Really, really touching. Thank you for sharing that with
us. Well, thank you. I wrote it in Florence, Italy, and on my bridge in Woodstock over my creek, where I have a shrine to the poet Gary Snyder. And by my Snyder shrine, I wrote the melody line once upon a summer day in 1997.
Well, you described Ellen as one of America's great bards. And when did you feel that you yourself achieved that title? You were very active from a very young age in social justice. Your first book, Poem from Jail, for crying out loud.
Well, when I wrote Poem from Jail, I had not yet met Allen, really. I mean, I knew of him. I had gone to a lot of poetry readings that he had given. My wife Miriam met in Greek class at New York University during the Bede era, and we went to all the readings, every single reading we could go to. And I saw a lot of Allen Ginsberg before I dared to try to get to know him, so I was too shy. I don't know. I think you go along in life as a young poet until you hear a kind of click in your psyche, and you know that, and you know that you're among the quote best minds of your generation, not in any arrogant way, but that you're writing poetry that's as good as you can do. You've learned a lot of things, studied languages, read a lot of poetry, and you're ready to. It's like a double Dutch skip thing. You look at the rope going around, then you jump in, and you're in the game. And that's the way I felt. And so by the time Poem from Jail was published, I had contacted Allen Ginsberg in India. I had asked him for some poems for a magazine I was editing, and we became friends then from then on for 36 years.
One of the problems is when poets achieve a certain degree of notoriety, having an editor is very important. And I'm guessing that Miriam helps you with keeping online. Is that accurate?
Well, she does a lot of proofing for my book. I agree with Allen Ginsberg. They didn't have to edit Allen Ginsberg. Why? Because Hal, even though it's a wild and pulsing and personal freedom type of poem, went through many, many, many drafts, maybe 100 drafts. He came up with the inspiration in 1955 in early part of the year, and then revised it and revised it and revised it and revised it until it came out in 56. And I'm of that school. I just revise, but it does help to have a mate who can help point out meadow muffins in the text. Let's put it that way. So Miriam's a great BS detector. She's not edited, but she's copy edited many of my books. My book on the Manson family. This book that's coming out of Allen's. I'm carrying the galleys around with me, and when I go back to Woodstock, she'll go through them for the final time, and then it'll come out. My daughter is also an ace editor. She's a patent attorney, and she goes through all my books, too, looking for meadow muffins and inconsistencies, shall we say.
That's a good way of putting it. I've never heard it said that way before. Miriam, you've been together with her for 37 years, for a guy considered
well,
maybe,
maybe
longer than that.
In Greek class, we had our first date in September of 58. Well, you know, marriage is, each person's, you know, Olson's last poem, Charles Olson's last poem is, you know, I set out now in a box upon the sea. It's one of his final poems toward the end of his career. So you're in a box on the sea. Each person's in a box on a sea. And somehow you lash a couple of boxes together in the big flood. And it sometimes works. My wife is very brilliant. She's a painter and now a well-known nature writer. And we have been together since September of 58, you know.
And when we think about the 60s, you know, all the free love and the promiscuity, and here you are, you know, co-founding the Yippies and very active in the 60s, and yet monogamous for over 40 years.
We've been together for a long time. It's never easy to be married, but we have had a fine commingling of souls. It's a soul thing. It's a, I'm not really religious, but there is this this melting together of minds and soul melding, soul weaving. I'm not sure what it is, but it's probably built into our codes some way. Anyway, we met in Greek class and got along, still getting along. I just talked to her 5 minutes ago.
We're talking with Ed Sanders. He is the visiting poet at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab for Spring 2000. I'm Paul Nelson.